Welcome to Sunday Special. I'm your host, Kevin Harkins, and this week we're taking you to the 2016 annual meeting of the Last Green Valley Incorporated, which took place this past Wednesday, the 15th of June, at Allen Hill Farm in Brooklyn, Connecticut. Let me talk about Allen Hill Farm for a moment. This was a spectacular venue in which to have this kind of event, or any special event. Known for hosting weddings, it's a beautiful old New England farm. The view from the hilltop at Allen Hill Farm is breathtaking, spectacular. It's a Christmas tree farm. They grow grapes, one or two other things. It's also a research facility, or at least they donate part of their land for State of Connecticut research, ag research. The barn at Allen Hill Farm is where the events are hosted, like our event at the Last Green Valley annual meeting, weddings, other special occasions. I urge you to check it out. It is simply a breathtaking atmosphere, a beautiful, beautiful place, very nicely decorated and lighted. The food? Oh, the food was absolutely scrumptious, and I'm critical about food. It's got to be good, or I'm not going to say it's good. Okay, now, the Last Green Valley Incorporated. We talk a lot on Heritage Information Radio about what's going on in the Last Green Valley. One of the ways to keep up on what's going on around the Last Green Valley is to listen to our station, obviously, to check out the lastgreenvalley.org website and the Last Green Valley on Facebook, attend some of the special events, get to know the folks. And coming to the annual meeting of the Last Green Valley Incorporated was a real treat. I learned a great deal, and I know you will too. So in a few minutes, we're going to bring you the proceedings of the annual 2016 meeting of the Last Green Valley Incorporated. Before we do that, though, let's listen to some documentary audio about the Last Green Valley provided to us by Connecticut Public Broadcasting.
Last Green Valley is actually a National Heritage Corridor, and there are about 50 National Heritage Corridors in the country right now. We were the fourth one designated. If you were to look at satellite image of the United States, from Washington, D.C., almost to Portland, Maine, that satellite image in the night sky is all lit up, and there's a little black dot, and that's basically where we are, within the 35 towns that comprise the National Heritage Corridor.
Can you tell us a little bit about the Source of the Sea program you just worked on?
Sure. Well, there's the two major rivers that flow through this area. Our name is actually the Quinebaug and Chautauquet Rivers Valley. They're beautiful, amazing rivers. However, a lot of people around here aren't as aware of them. You know, back in the early 19th century, that's how this area very much grew, was from industry. And rivers were used for powering textile mills and industry. But with the decline of the textile industry, a lot of the use of the rivers for power was gone. The industry moved out of the area. And people, in some cases, really turned their backs on the rivers. The amazing thing is people don't know, necessarily, that this water ends up in Long Island Sound. And so the Source to Sea program was really a water resources education program. So we had 95 different partner organizations. We did about 90 different events and programs. And the way we sort of attracted attention to it was by actually paddling the entire watershed. We had about 50 different paddling trips all going on. And we finished all the way down at Long Island Sound. It took about 9 weeks. Every weekend, we had two or three different paddles going on. And we used the paddling expedition as a way to draw attention to the program. But the goals of the program were to get people to think about the water resources that we have here and also how to protect it. This area has some of the best trout fishing in the state of Connecticut, and a lot of people don't realize that. Now, there's plenty of great places to go fishing. There's lots of ponds and lakes throughout the whole area. But for trout fishing, the best place is probably on the Natchog River. There's a Natchog State Park, which is probably about 10 miles from here. It runs primarily down along Route 198 And the Natchog River flows along that route also. And there's lots of places down there where you can get access to the river and do trout fishing.
Mashmuck it is, a Native American word for land of good fishing, and it may have referred not to just Mashmucket Brook, but to this whole area, meaning probably all the brooks in this area.
A lot of people do bass fishing in some of the ponds and lakes in the area. For river fishing for bass, the Quinebaug can be pretty good, and you can get access to that down on what's called Aspinuck Pond down in Canterbury. Also, the Shetucket River even has salmon, and so you actually have salmon coming back upstream to spawn. And the other thing that we have in this area, not that far from here, is actually one of the state trout hatcheries. And they release, I believe, somewhere about 600,000 trout throughout the region on an annual basis. So if you like trout fishing, this is the place to come.
How about the wildlife? What is that like here?
It's pretty amazing. A lot of animals are coming back from hunting and from years back. We do have moose in the area. We do have some black bear. We have some people refer to them as fisher cats have returned to the area. A lot of wild turkeys, bald eagle, osprey, a lot of bird species. And the state parks in particular, there's five different state parks within the Last Green Valley. Those are great locations to go and view wildlife.
My last question for you is, how can the residents of Connecticut keep the Last Green Valley successful and flourishing?
Well, as Director of External Affairs, I would want them to consider becoming a member of the Last Green Valley. And membership is only $25 for an individual and $45 for a family. But as a resident of this area and as a resident of Connecticut, the Last Green Valley belongs to you. It was federally designated. We've been designated through the year 2015. And so you're a taxpayer. You own us.
The process we use involves putting the net down on the bottom, and then we disturb the stones and the soil so that everything that's flowing through here will end up in the net. One of my jobs is I'm grant funded by the Last Green Valley to coordinate their water quality monitoring program for volunteers. And I don't always walk around with a net, but one of the programs we do is called Rapid Bioassessment. And I train volunteers to go into our rivers and streams that are wadeable and collect stream insects that are very good indicators of water quality. I'm standing in Mashamucket Brook, and Mashamucket Brook has a lot of what we refer to as riffles. These are areas where the water is tumbling over the rocks. And in these areas, they'll be really well oxygenated, and it also is going to provide a lot of different habitat. So the program we do, Rapid Bioassessment, we take nets such as this, they're kick nets, and we collect the insects, and then we sort them and look for the type of insects that are there, which will tell a whole lot about the water quality. I'm washing the rock because some of the things cling to them. Now, this is not the ideal season of the year to do this because it's summer, and for these insects, a lot of them, it's mating season, so they're adults, so they won't be in the water. So this protocol is always done in the fall season, and in this part of Connecticut, there's nothing like standing in a stream while you've got beautiful fall foliage all around you. I'll see if we got anything. This actually, you see this rock? It has, it looks like a cluster of rocks on top of it. That's actually a kind of caddisfly larvae enclosure. They take rocks and weave it into a structure to protect their soft bodies. There's several different kinds of caddisflies that live in Connecticut, and this one is here on this rock. That's why I was scrubbing the rocks, to try to knock those things off. We always put them back. When we sort them, we use high-tech equipment like this ice cube tray. This is how we could it's just like sorting anything. You just take the different organisms and put different kinds, match them up, and put them in different cubes. And I know there were some things in here. And I know there's one more, at least in here, different type. They're well camouflaged. It's nice when you have young kids with you helping you because their eyesight is better. Some other type of fly larvae.
We have some data sheets here. This is what we, our volunteers use. Very simplified format. You don't have to be an entomologist to be able to understand them. It's got a simple picture diagram, look with the key components shown. On this one, we see that it has three tails, and the front legs are more robust than in other varieties of mayflies. So when you're trying to tell them apart, we look for these key characteristics. This one's known as the bodybuilder mayfly, which is a name it was given. It's not something you'd find in any kind of a field guide, but it makes it more fun for the volunteers involved. You do not need to have a science background to be involved in this program. It'll also give you information about behaviors. When these things are alive and they're moving around in the tray, this one will like to crawl along the leaves, stones, and stay in hiding. It might occasionally swim by slowly, where other ones are darting around everywhere. There's one that's known to do push-ups. And when you see it doing, it does. It really does.
And so it truly is the last Green Valley because of the megalopolis, the intercoastal megalopolis from Washington to Portland. It is the last spot of pretty much undeveloped land. We're almost 80% still forests and fields. So that's why we call ourselves the last Green Valley, and our work is to keep it that way.
That audio courtesy of CPBN Media, and we thank them very much for that. All right, I think we're ready to get started, so we take you now to Allen Hill Farm in Brooklyn, Connecticut, for the 2016 annual meeting of the Last Green Valley Incorporated.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Bill Jabagi. I'm chairman of the board. I'd like to welcome you to our annual meeting. And just for a few introductions, I'd first like to introduce Rick Ives, the first selectman of Brooklyn.
Thanks very much. I'd like to welcome everybody. I'm not sure you could have picked a better night at a better venue with a great organization. So welcome to Brooklyn. Enjoy yourself and have a great evening. Thank you very much.
And our host, Charlie Langevin, is he?
Yes, he is.
Here, thank you for hosting us in this wonderful venue, Charlie.
Thank you, Bill, and thank you, members of the Last Green Valley, for inviting our first selectman. It's the first time he comes to the farm, and I've been trying to get him out here, so much appreciated. Rick, you finally made it. Thank you. Rick has to be in three places at once. He's got a referendum going and a Board of Finance meeting, so I'm glad he came. But seriously, I want to thank Lois, Bill, Dr. Bellantoni, who I'm sure will have a fascinating little program for us along the Quinebaug River. If you can find it to stay, we've got five tractors and hay wagons waiting to truck you down to the Quinebaug, to, I think, a fascinating place. As a youngster, I walked along the river, and I wondered why the colonists would waste their time building a wall across the river. I was about 8,000 years off. It wasn't the colonists. We think it's the Native Americans. And Dr. Bellantoni will talk about that this evening. He says all these configurations are not weird, so I'm anxious to see what he has to say about this one. And I hope you join us. A little bit about who we are and what we do here at the farm. I'd like to introduce my family, and we're very, very fortunate to have my aunt Clarice Langevin Pakulis here. She lives in Florida, but she came up for a family wedding on Saturday, and she's very important in our lives because she started to, with her husband Charles, who had John Deere dealership, She helped us get started in the 80s when we first started planting trees. Aunt Claire is sitting in the corner. Would you give a wave, Aunt Claire? Sitting with Aunt Claire is my sister-in-law and partner, Sue Langevin. Sue? Sue's daughter, Amy Anderson, who is in charge of the weddings now. By the way, the wedding event's one of our best crops. Oh, yeah. Amy takes care of showing the hall, booking the hall. It's her venue, and we're very happy that she can do that for us. Amy, are you in the barn here? No, I think she's out maybe with the kids. Her three children were here with her, Aiden, Ella, and Evan. Hopefully the next generation, they've got to grow quickly because I want to spend more time on the golf course. My partner and brother-in-law, Roland Gibeau, is here. Roland? Roland is married to my my sister, Carmen. And my partner in many ways, my wife Marion, is here. Marion? Quick history. 1891. French immigrants, maybe working in Waurigan. Pierre Bouthillier, my mother's side, purchased 230 acres here from the William Putnam family. Maybe a direct descendant of Israel. That's not to say Israel was on this land. But William Putnam was, I think, maybe his great-grandson. Got to look into it. So my great-grandfather bought these acres. God bless him. Had, I think, a good eye. And had a large family. Three of his sons settled here. Each had a farm on Allen Hill Road, and each married a shoddier sister. So when we have our cousins' reunions, we need a big hall. So we've got the generation after, three brothers, three sisters, lots of cousins. This farm stayed in the family. In the year 2000, we purchased the contiguous farm from the Joseph Bouthillier family. That was one of the three. The third farm is no longer in the family, but we're very happy to have about 350 acres here that have been family land since the 1890s. Got about 100 acres in Christmas trees, and we started planting those in 1980. We didn't know anything about trees, and we started and lost our first crop. Decided to join the Christmas Tree Growers Association and learn a little bit about the culture, and it's been a blessing working with that association ever since. We've got about 60 acres in hay, and the neighbors pretty much consume that. They bale it and process it and, I think, sell it and use it themselves. The little orchard, which is right close by, is about 60 trees. The remainder of the land, 350 acres, the remainder is in forest and wetlands. We've been able to get much assistance through federal and state programs. We've enjoyed working with the USDA for the Conservation Stewardship Program. The WIP program has helped us combat invasives like autumn olive, bittersweet, Japanese, barberry, and knotweed. A few years ago, we set aside about 8 acres for the endangered New England cottontail, and that work is in progress now. Through grants, we're able to attain solar panels. You'll see them on the next barn. Those are both USDA and Connecticut Ag grants. And the biggest involvement with the state of Connecticut is that in 2010, just 6 years ago, we negotiated with the state of Connecticut and put 330 of the 350 acres into farmland preservation. So, thank you. The ancestors had the fortitude not to sell the land when there were tremendous real estate pressures. So it was the least we could do to make sure it goes forward in one piece. We did keep 10 acres around this barn out of the program and 10 acres on our next barn out of the program in case future generations want to do something. My nephew's growing grapes down in the south field, so who knows where that's going to go. Anyway,
yeah, we saw it.
The farm was a dairy before, and from about 1900 to 1964, then the barn burnt, and then the land was rented out. Cow corn, the Milotic family from Sterling used it, and then in the 80s, as I said before, we started planting Christmas trees. We knew it would be no work. I have some fellow growers here who should chuckle extra hard about that. It's a lot of work. Right now there are experiments going on in the farm. The Connecticut Ag experimental scientists from Windsor are carrying on some culture experiments dealing with Phytophthora root rot. We're trying to solve those problems. And there's another patch. You may see some flags as you go around where we're working on herbicides, the best use of pre and post-emerge. But the thing that I'm most excited about is having Dr. Beltone here this evening. I can't wait to hear what he has to say. And that's my plug to get as many of you in those hay wagons as we can. I pulled the neighbors out for this show tonight, so don't be afraid to jump on and join us. Thank you, folks. Thanks for coming.
Tony, thank you so much. Thank you and your family for hosting us. This is a terrific location. We're honored to be here, and you did so well with the weather. Couldn't have had a better day. I'm Lois Brunage, Executive Director, and because it's the annual meeting, I wanted to give you some really quick highlights from the past year and this past spring, some of the work that we've been doing. As you probably know, we do a lot to try and connect people to the resources here in the Last Green Valley. And one of the big programs we have is Walktober. This past fall, we celebrated our 25th anniversary, biggest Walktober ever, with about 200 opportunities for people to get out and explore. But this year, we have done even better. For the 26th year, we have about 250 experiences lined up. Thank you, Marcy, thank you all, partners. It's going to be a wonderful Walktober. We also, this spring, launched a new program called Spring Outdoors because people are always asking us, well, can you do it again in the spring? We started with about 25 different walks in April and May, and they really focused on land conservation. So they were primarily sponsored by towns and by land trusts, and we hope to grow that program next spring. We have monthly programs, Acorn Adventures, Mystery Member Meanders, member programs. We would love to have you join us on those programs. We have rangers out and about 70 different events during the year, getting the word out about the Last Green Valley. We also have our Explore Guide. Last year was the first year that we published it in this format, and the 2016 version is now out, and it's even bigger and better and more content than before. So if you haven't gotten one, make sure you pick one up. We also do some work with trying to preserve historic and cultural resources. Last year, we awarded 4 small grants for telling stories that matter, and this year we have another grant round that's open until July 28th. And we invite nonprofits and historic societies and towns to come forward and submit some applications. We also started a quarterly speaker series with historic societies and public libraries and others interested in archival types of things, and we've had two meetings, and the next one is already planned. On the water resource side of things, our water quality monitoring program is going great guns. We have about 100 volunteers out and around testing throughout the watershed. We also have a watershed classroom education program. We reached about 3,000 students last year, and we're on our way to doing that again this year. And really important, we received word about a week and a half ago that our application for National Recreation Trail status for the Shetucket River has been approved, and we got the plaque in the mail. And now, between the National Rec Trail designation on the Shetucket River, the Willimantic River, and the Quinebaug River, we have 87 miles of National Recreation Water Trail in the Last Green Valley. I'm really proud of that. On the land side of things, as you might know, we fund cleanups. And of the 23 cleanups that we've funded or partially funded this year, 1,149 volunteers have collected more than 25 tons of trash. Little nip bottles are actually, unfortunately, the biggest problem this year. One cleanup picked up 1,100 nip bottles. It's kind of sad. Senator Austin was here before. She unfortunately had to leave, but she said she filed a bill last year and she wants to refile it again to get a deposit on the nip bottles. The other big problem, unfortunately, that we picked up this year, 774 tires removed in a handful of cleanups this year. It's kind of sad. But great job by the volunteers. Also on the land side, we embarked on a large federal grant project to work with agricultural producers to try and build healthy soils and improve water quality. And in our largest effort to date, we've recently submitted a grant application for a forest stewardship project that could bring more than $5 million directly to landowners for forest management and to pay for conservation easements on forest land. Please keep your fingers crossed. We should know within the next month whether we're going to move forward to the next round of that grant application. But we couldn't do any of this work without you. Our members, donors, sponsors, business partners, nonprofit partners, from the smallest of in-kind contributions to the largest cash donations, every bit is important. And we truly, truly appreciate everything that you've done for us as members and supporters. Most of you are listed in our annual report, but I do want to acknowledge some of our largest sponsors: First Niagara Bank, Bill and Sylvia Jobagi, Keith and Elaine Knowlton, Millennium Power Partners, Nancy Politis, Savings Institute Bank and Trust, and Southbridge Savings Bank. I would love a round of applause for our big sponsors. Thank you. We also couldn't do it without our really terrific volunteers. We have rangers, we have people working on cleanups, we have water quality monitoring volunteers, Walktober leaders, Water Trail committee members, Taste of the Valley committee members, board members, collectively last year contributed 9,400 hours worth more than $250,000 of time. I would like to acknowledge some of the volunteers that are here, our board members. I'm just going to have you guys stand up or wave. Bill Jabagi, Mike Nelson is our vice chair. Let me just go through the list. He's from Norwich. Myra Ambrogi is our secretary from Plainfield. Wave. Tom Dufresne is our treasurer. He's from Southbridge. Tom, there you go. Elsie Bissett from Voluntown works for Killingly. Elsie was up top, yep. Janet Blanchette from Thompson, over here. Mary Ellen Ellsworth from Eastford, over here. Marty Nisby from Woodstock with a business in Dudley. Where's Marty? Oh, Marty over here, thank you. Wade Schmidt from Pomfret, they was upstairs. And Joan Sanamet from Woodstock. I think I got all the board members, right? Thank you very much for all your time. I also need to acknowledge my staff. Marcy Dolly, where is she? Project Administrator, Lead Ranger for Fun. Everybody knows Marcy, right? Lyanne Graff, Coordinator. Bill Reed, Chief Ranger. Sharon Wakely, Finance Administrator. And two of our consultants are here. Christine Armstrong, she's our Education Outreach Consultant. And Jean Pillow, our Water Quality Monitoring Coordinator, is back here. To Bill for a quick piece of business.
Yeah, just interrupt the excitement with a quick piece of business. You've all seen InTouch, our annual report for this year, and I'm particularly pleased by the fact that it has some interesting stories that you can read, as well as all of the things that belong in the annual report. But according to our bylaws, we are required to accept the annual report at this meeting. So I will entertain a motion to accept the annual report. Thank you. Second? All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Thank you. Okay, back to Lewis for some exciting announcements.
Good job, Bill.
All right. Moving forward, we have some really exciting news. The board has taken two important steps to ensure the long-term sustainability of this organization and the region. First, we're establishing Alaska Green Valley Legacy Society. The Legacy Society includes anyone who wishes to benefit Alaska Green Valley in the future in their will or through other estate plans. It doesn't matter how big or small, how complex or simple, if you'd like to be part of the Legacy Society, it's through just a thoughtful way to ensure that the things you love about the Alaska Green Valley live on. We have four inaugural members of the Legacy Society, and we hope that if your bequest plans include Alaska Green Valley or you would like to include us, that you'll let us know. We'd be happy to add your name to the list. You can remain anonymous if you wish, or if you let us use your name, we might be able to inspire others to do the same. The second announcement is that we're making it easier for you to feel confident in the long-term stability of this organization to ensure that any gift you make really will benefit this region into the future. We're excited to be partnering with the Greater Worcester Community Foundation and the Community Foundation of Eastern Connecticut to establish two agency endowment funds that were designed specifically for nonprofits like us. By establishing these funds, we hope to increase our visibility, increase our capacity to secure major gifts, and we're going to obtain some high-quality investment management services. So we're happy to announce that we recently received a significant donation and a pledge of another donation, and we're well on our way to actually doubling our initial investment in those endowment funds already. And we haven't even signed the paperwork yet. We're working on it. So it's pretty exciting news. Yeah. We invite you to contact us or contact the representatives from the funds directly. In fact, Lily Rhodes from the Community Foundation is over here if you want to learn more about them. So with your help, not only can we care for and enjoy the Alaska Green Valley, but we can pass it on to future generations. And I'd like to say thank you personally to our board of directors for their vision and their leadership in him taking these steps. And I hope you'll join me in a round of applause for the work they're doing to ensure the future of the Alaska Green Valley.
Okay, some more business. We have some appointments for board members, and I'd like to briefly describe that. We have five board members who have reached their three-year term, and they've all volunteered to be serve for an additional 3 years. So we'd like to make the appointments for those folks. And we have two new board members who have agreed to serve on the board. One of them, Deborah Burns, I believe she's here. Yes, from Eastford, and Jim Gothrow, is he here as well? Yeah. From Putnam, they both agreed to serve as board members, and the board has agreed to elect them. So we need to appoint these board members. So I'd like to make a motion that we appoint the following board members for three-year terms. Myself, Bill Jabagi, Mike Nelson, Myra Ambrogi, Donna Barron, Mark Wynn, Deborah Burns, and Jim Gothrow. May I have a second, please?
Second.
Are there any discussions? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Okay, thank you. Okay, we have some thoughts?
We do. All right. About a year and a half ago, Congress officially changed our name from the Quinnebaug and Shetucket Rivers Valley National Heritage Corridor to the Last Green Valley National Heritage Corridor. Back when the corridor was first formed, we had provided plaques to all of the towns within the Heritage Corridor, and many of them still have them hanging on their town hall entranceways or in their selectmen's rooms. Some of them are long lost and no one knows anything about them. But we thought it was a good time to create new plaques for all the 35 towns in the National Heritage Corridor. And we invited selectmen and representatives to come, and we have a number of people here tonight. Unfortunately, Rick Ives had to leave, so he snuck away with his plaque. But I'd like all of the town representatives who are here tonight to come on up and get your plaque, and then we would love to have you stand here for a minute so we can all take a picture. We hope you'll display them proudly as a member of the Last Green Valley National Heritage Corridor. We have three people from Canterbury: Roy Piper, Christopher Lipke, and Melissa Gill. We have Arthur Broder from Eastford, Randy Thompson from Hampton, Dave Griffiths from Killingly. Dave, come in. If not, Elsie can come down. Let's see, Mark Lang, Keith Laporte from Lebanon, Myra Ibrogi from Plainfield. Yep. Kathy Austin was here from Sprague. Senator Austin had to leave for another event, but she took hers with her. And Pam Delaney from Voluntown. Who have I got here? I got Lebanon. That's you.
Coming down.
All right. Thank you. Myra? Yeah, they are heavy. They are, Robert? Oh, don't forget, Martinez. I went right over there. Right over there, your name on the list. Sorry. Voluntown. All right. Those are people. Great. If we could somehow...
There's Brian right there.
You know what? If you don't mind sticking around for a few minutes, I think maybe on the deck would be a good idea to take a picture. I think we'd have a lot more space. So if you give me about three more minutes to do the rest of the awards, that would be great. These are indoor-outdoor, shade-proof, moisture-proof, trail sign wall. I hope so. Graffiti-proof. Thank you. All right. The final piece of the business meeting before we can go on the tour is we would like to give out some awards. We need to recognize a couple people for their work over the previous year. We have two honorees who couldn't be here tonight, but we wanted to acknowledge their contribution. One is Alex McNitt from the Central Mass South Chamber of Commerce. She served on our board from 2012 to 2016, but is going off the board because of other commitments. The second person is Roland Beelan from Ellis Tech High School. He supported our Water Trails program because he was the teacher who supervised 3 years worth of students in building all of the kiosks that we're putting up at the public launch locations on the water trails. So he actually helped the students construct 16 different kiosks and get them installed on the Quinnebaug, the Willimantic, and the Shetucket River. And we already gave him a certificate. He couldn't be here tonight, but we truly appreciate it. Yeah, they had to graduate tonight, and he promised to be there. So. But we do have some people who are here tonight that we'd like to recognize. We are pleased to present the Voice of the Valley Award to Mike Nelson from Charter Communications. Mike has been Charter's community service supervisor almost from the beginning, in the 80s, right?
Yeah.
It's been a while. He's responsible for directing or guiding thousands of original programs on the Charter Community Access Station, including two that we've appeared on many times, Town Talk and From the Home Front. He's taught 1,000 residents how to use all of Charter's equipment, and under his supervision, the Charter mobile van has filmed more than 500 community events in the Last Green Valley. In the words of the journalist who nominated him for this award, Mike is a modest, gifted, and generous person who gives credit to others before himself. Without Mike and Charter Communications, we wouldn't enjoy the array of original programming that we do here in Eastern Connecticut. So thank you, Mike, for going above and beyond and for loving the last Green Valley. Thank you. Our final award, and then we'll introduce Nick, and then we'll be off on the wagons. Our final award is for the annual Walktober Crown. The Mr. or Ms. Walktober honor has been bestowed upon only a small number of people and walk leaders, and this year we're pleased to introduce a dynamic duo from Norwich. They have, joining the extraordinary club, we've got Diane Brown and Regan Miner from Norwich. Come on up, ladies. They've teamed up to provide what's become a model for other towns by organizing. They actually coordinate and schedule all the walks in Norwich so that people can have a really nice day and a great Walktober experience. Diane loves Norwich architecture. She lives in an 1860s Greek Revival home. She was in secretary of the Norwich Historical Society, co-chair of the Norwich, all right, let me get this right, semi-septennial celebration, 350 years. So it was natural for her to become part of the newly forming Walktober Planning Group in Norwich a few years ago. She's been chairwoman for the last 2 years, and the results are remarkable. Norwich has hosted 115 walks and events since 2014, and they have 35 planned for 2016. Yeah, really great. Regan is a Norwich native. She graduated from Norwich Free Academy in UConn, and she's currently pursuing a master's degree in public history at CCSU. As a consultant to the Norwich Historical Society, she's amassed more than $120,000 in grant funds towards some major restoration and interpretive projects. She's on the board of the Society of the Founders of Norwich, and she's the facilitator for the Norwich Heritage Groups. So thank you, Diane and Regan, for helping us make Walktober so successful and for providing a great model for other towns to follow. And congratulations, Team Walktober 2016.
Okay, that concludes our business. I'll entertain a motion to adjourn. A second? Okay, we are adjourned. I'd like to introduce now someone I'm sure you all know, Dr. Nick. You want to come up or you want to?
Nick Bellantoni's a rock star. Come on. Up. He is the emeritus. There we go. He's the emeritus state archaeologist. And he spent most of his career at UConn. He's still wearing the UConn shirt. As an adjunct associate research professor, director of the Connecticut State Museum of Natural History and Archaeology, he's been excavating and preserving archaeological sites, which means he digs up skeletons all the time. And he's been doing it in Connecticut for 40 years. He's the former president of the National Association of State Archaeologists, but of course his most important honorary title was Mr. Walktober in 2014. And we're glad that he is still around and still leading walks and willing to come out here tonight for us. So thank you.
We'll go down to the river and just think of this as one of my walks, only this time because of Charlie, I won't get lost. I've been known to do that in a few walks. Those of you that have been out with me know. So we're going to be safe this time. Charlie will get us down there and back. And we'll tell you a little bit about the Native American and historic use of the river in that area. So those of you that can join us, looking forward to seeing you down there. So I guess we just hop on the wagon.
One picture, but yes, feel free to grab the picture you want, maybe put it in the road, put your sneakers on, grab some bug spray. Thank you all very, very much.
Oh, I love the rain coming down. Sounds like a hymn to the garden ground. Joy springs from the singing ground, pulsing with each raindrop sound. Summer sun bleaches soil, plants pray in thirsty toil. Waiting, waiting day and night, waiting for rain to wet things right. Oh, I love the rain coming down, sounds like a hymn to the garden ground. Joy springs from the singing ground, pulsing with each raindrop sound. Only rain or only sun won't grow food for anyone. Sunny days all the time make happy folks, but not divine. Oh, I love the rain coming down, sounds like a hymn to the garden ground. Joy springs from the singing ground, pulsing with each raindrop sound. Gardens need a balance of rain for sunny crops drying in pain. With two blessings from above, there shall be food for all. I love the rain coming down, sounds like a hymn to the garden ground. Joy springs from the singing ground, pulsing with each raindrop sound. Summer sun bleaches the soil, plants praying in thirsty toil. Waiting, waiting day and night, waiting for rain to wet things right. Oh, I love the rain coming down, sounds like a hymn to the garden ground. Joy springs from the singing ground, pulsing with each raindrop sound. Oh, I love the rain coming down, sounds like a hymn to the garden ground. Joy springs from the singing ground, pulsing with each raindrop sound. Sunny crops drying in pain. With two blessings from above, there shall be food for all. I love the rain coming down, sounds like a hymn to the garden ground. Joy springs from the singing ground, pulsing with each raindrop sound. Pulsing with each raindrop sound. Pulsing with each raindrop sound.
Jonathan J. Babcock and the Garden Song there, singer-songwriter. As we close out our program, and I think as promised to a very action-packed annual meeting for the Las Green Valley, do hope that you learned as much as I did. It has been almost a year, about 10 months, since Heritage Information Radio became the radio voice of the Las Green Valley, and we have enjoyed so much working with these folks. They are the kindest, gentlest, generous, smartest people. They really care, as do all of us, about the land we love and the heritage of Eastern Connecticut and South Central Massachusetts. So consider joining the fun. It's very satisfying. Consider becoming a member of the Las Green Valley. As you heard Bill Reed say earlier, it's very affordable. $25 a year for individual membership, $45 for a family. Businesses, how about becoming a business partner with the Las Green Valley Incorporated? It's a great, a fantastic branding opportunity. Now, I want to direct your attention, and we're going to be talking a lot about it, is going to be September 18th, the Taste of the Valley. And that's going to be held on Sunday, September 18th. This is their big, huge, gigantic fundraiser. And it's fun. It's food. It's all fresh produce and fresh food from the Last Green Valley. There's auctions and all sorts of things going on. And if you check that out on the Last Green Valley website, it's thelastgreenvalley.org. That's, again, coming up. Mark your calendar right now, if you would, for Sunday, September 18th. You can get all the information at thelastgreenvalley.org. There are also a number of very reasonable sponsorship packages available. That information is on the website as well, and we'll be talking more about that on Heritage Information Radio. Just go up to thelastgreenvalley.org. And finally, this program note, next week my guest on the Sunday special will be none other than Miss Walktober 2016, Regan Miner. And we'll be talking about what's going on in Norwich and the Heritage and Regional Visitors Center, the Heritage Groups, Walktober, and a whole bunch of fun stuff. So join me with Miss Walktober. One of two Miss Walktobers, both from Norwich, Diane Brown and Regan Miner. Regan will be my guest next Sunday on Sunday Special. Thank you so much for joining us. I'm Kevin Harkins. Let's go out with a little music, very appropriate music, from Maria Sangiello in a song entitled The Last Green Valley.
Sure, I'm no farmer. Don't drive no truck. Wasn't born in this town, don't know how to plow. Sure, I'm no local, don't know the history. Wasn't taught in the school, don't go to the church. But I love this old village. Whitewashed houses, general store, three-room library. Walks through the cemetery to the richest ice cream. Playing their tricks on us when we're not looking. Sure, I'm a dreamer. I don't like changes. I'd like to believe this land is worth saving. Don't change this old village. Whitewashed houses, general store, three-room library. Walks through the cemetery to the richest to Boston. Just green fields of winter rise.